Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, are we close? Are we close? What's going? First of all, it's like the old joke. There's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that the numbers are huge. The numbers are absolutely huge. You will recall a couple of years ago when we first, well, actually 4 years ago, 4 years ago this week on this show, I was doing grief counseling and suicide prevention. I mean, I had on my psychotherapist hat by the way, for the folks doing Wikipedia, yes, I was on the roster of psychotherapists in the state of Vermont for 2 years. In any case, I had that hat on, and I was talking people off the edges of ledges. I mean, you know, people were so freaked out. It looks pretty good that that ain't going to happen again. In fact, that we may well hear, not Jerry Ford say it again, he's gone on to the other world, but Jerry Ford was actually, you know, I think, you know, he blew it in fully pardoning Nixon and created a terrible precedent. But he was a fundamentally decent man, which is something that is a real rare thing these days in the Republican Party. There's a couple from Maine, I think, and that's about it. But Jerry Ford, as he said.
My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over.
Are we there now? I think we may well be. I think we may well be. And so the question is John McCain now going to reach across the aisle, assuming that Barack Obama wins this race? And all of the numbers everywhere pretty much look, and I realize, you know, this is like whistling past a graveyard, you know, jinx the thing, et cetera. And I've been very wary about doing this. And in particular, for those of us, those of you who live on the West Coast or in the Western states, if the East Coast goes so heavily for Barack Obama today, as it may, and if the networks then decide that they're going to call the election what the hell anyway, still, there are, you know, number one, Obama is not going to be able to govern without a massive mandate. And the odds are not all that high that he's going to have the very large numbers that he needs in the Senate. Yesterday, we did a large chunk of our show about the 60 votes in the Senate. I was on Coast to Coast TV last night in Canada, Canadian television, and was preceded by a couple of governors, a Republican and a Democrat, and then Armstrong Williams and I were on to debate the election. And even Armstrong Williams was saying, that's it, the Republicans had their chance, they blew it, it's going to be Barack Obama, he's going to have 130 electoral votes. But when you look over at 538.com, for example, they're suggesting that it's a, you know, the probability of 58 votes in the Senate is over 50%. But 59 votes in the Senate, it's only 45%. 60 votes in the Senate, it's only 15% or 17% probability. And without 60 votes in the Senate, Barack Obama is going to have a hell of a challenge. So, number one, if you're in a Western state, even if this thing gets called early, still get out and vote. Because you never know. I mean, you absolutely never know. Even though they call it, they're calling it, projecting, you know, votes out west, and take nothing for granted. Particularly given the election theft that's been going on in this election, we know now that at least 5 million people are going to show up to vote and be told, "Sorry, you can't vote. The Republicans have scrubbed you from the rolls." It was 3 million in 2004. It is clearly going to be at least 5 million this time. Number one, and number two, there are a lot of other important things on the ballot. In California, for example, Proposition 2, an animal rights proposition, and Proposition 8. This is a huge one. Prop 8, which would amend the Constitution of the state of California to ban gay marriage. So, you know, we need to get out there and vote no on Prop 8 and yes on Prop 2. We need to get out there and vote for Democrats down ticket. And certainly we need to be, and most important of all, we need to get out there and vote for Barack Obama, no matter where you live. Even if you live in Alaska or Hawaii, get out there and vote, regardless of how this thing is called. It is so important. A friend of mine from California last night called up and just said, Tom, I hope on your show tomorrow you'll tell people to get out and vote no matter how this thing, you know, found the West Coast. Yes, absolutely, Barbara. We have to get out and vote. But in my mind, this is the larger issue, and this is my blog today. And first of all, a tip of the hat to Roger Kluck. Roger Kluck wrote an op-ed about this, a letter to the editor that he sent out. And by the way, when you send me things, there are some folks who, you know, occasionally will send me links or they'll send me articles. I can read things that are in line, but I can't click off into links and I can't open attachments. So please just, you know, if you want me to read something, copy it into the body of the email, first of all. But in any case, Roger Kluck sent me this thing and that I didn't know and caused me to go back and find this book published in 1901 called Lincoln's Yarns and Stories. It was published by Colonel Alexander K. McClure. And about 30 years after the Civil War ended, McClure started compiling sayings of Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln was much beloved in the United States in the 1880s and 1870s. And McClure started compiling these things. His book was first published in 1901. In fact, over at ABE Books, you can find copies of it, you know, first editions, $300-$400. And one of the most interesting stories in the book is not a story about folksy sayings of Abraham Lincoln, but really about his career-long battle with Stephen A. Douglas. The Lincoln-Douglas debates were not the presidential debates, the famous ones. The Lincoln-Douglas debates were when Abe Lincoln in 1858 was running against Stephen A. Douglas for the seat that Barack Obama is now holding in the United States Senate from Illinois. And they scheduled these debates all over the state of Illinois. And the debates, and although Lincoln lost that election, he compiled the debates into a book, he published it, and it became a bestseller in Illinois and around the nation, for that matter. It was a major bestseller in 1859. The Lincoln-Douglas debates, published by Abe Lincoln and some friends of his. And it propelled him to the presidency in 1860 and caused him to win. So, you know, he took on Douglas. Stephen and Douglas, basically, throughout Lincoln's life, had been his political enemy, his nemesis. And here's Douglas. He's in the United States Senate. He's from the opposite party. And Lincoln invites him up on the platform for his inaugural address in March of 1861, excuse me. And Colonel McClure, and by the way, this was a very divisive fight. The election battle of 1860 in many ways set up the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln was referred to as a traitor to the white race. He was referred to as anti-American. He was referred to as not one of us. He was referred to as a man who should be eliminated. There was open talk about assassinating Lincoln after he was elected and before he was inaugurated. There was a lot of concern in this country that the country was literally coming apart, and in fact, it did. So Stephen Douglas, the guy who beat Abraham Lincoln in the Senate race 2 years earlier, who had been his political rival his entire life, and who lost to him in the presidential race in 1860, was standing on the platform with Lincoln as he was about to give his inaugural address. And let me just read to you from this book compiled in the late 1800s by Colonel Alexander K. McClure. He says, when Mr. Lincoln delivered his first inaugural, he was introduced by his friend, United States Senator E.D. Baker of Oregon. He carried a cane and a little roll, the manuscript of his inaugural address. There was a moment's pause after the introduction, as Abraham Lincoln vainly looked for a spot where he may place his high silk hat. Stephen A. Douglas, the political antagonist of his whole public life, the man who had pressed him hardest in the campaign of 1860, was seated just behind him. Douglas stepped forward quickly and took the hat, which Mr. Lincoln held helplessly in his hand. Douglas whispered smilingly to Mrs. Brown, a cousin of Mrs. Lincoln and a member of the president's party, if I can't be president, at least I can hold his hat. Will John McCain show the same grace in healing the wounds that he and Stephen Smith and Karl Rove and Fox News and all of the vicious partisans in the Republican Party, Roger Ailes and company, have created in this country? I think John McCain has it in him. I don't think Sarah Palin does, but I think John McCain does. Will he be a statesman? It's going to be really interesting to see. And that's assuming, and that may be a very big assumption, that's assuming that Barack Obama actually wins today, which we should absolutely not take for granted. So what are your experiences voting? By the way, in our second hour, John Dean and Al Franken are going to drop by. In our third hour, Katrina Vandenhoevel. We're going to have a great show today. Give us a call. I'd like to hear your experiences voting today. 16 minutes.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The hour helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman with you. Let's see here. Real quickly, we've got a whole lot of, as we always do. I mean, the board is always slammed. No need to tell me how great the show is. No need to thank me for putting you on the air. Please don't say you've got three comments and two questions. One point, if you want to make another one, you can call back again. Let's just get through as many calls as we can today. It's going to be a very, very busy day. Steve in Middlesex, New Jersey. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I just want to predict McCain's going to win. I voted for Barack. I donated to Hillary and Barack a couple $100s. But from what I see here in central New Jersey, there's nothing but McCain signs. And yeah, on some lawns, it's Palin signs. That they're voting for Palin. There are pink Palin signs all over the place. What was I going to say? The people are still prejudiced. And I also believe they're stupid. They believe every lie the Republicans have said.
Well, that's absolutely true, Steve. You know, it is true that there are a lot. Thank you for the call. There are a lot of people voting that way, and this is why. 23% or 28% of Texans believe that Barack Obama is a Muslim. This is my point about John McCain. If he loses this election, has an obligation to help heal this country. He has to undo the damage that was done by the lies that were promulgated by the partisans in the Republican Party. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Well, I just want to know who is doing what about this computer glitch and the downloading from the Ohio, returns, because right. It only took them one state to cheat in 2000, one state to cheat in 2004. All they need to do is use what they've already, the cheating mechanism they already have in place for Ohio, and cheat in Nevada, and they've got it.
Well, we'll see. I strongly believe, I'd say with some certain level of certainty, that they are cheating in a whole bunch of states. But I don't think it's going to be enough. I mean, this is the point that we were making back 4 years ago, is, they stole 3, 4, 5 million votes last year. This time we need to turn out 6, 8, 10 million extra votes to make it an unstealable victory. And frankly, I think that that's going to happen. Carl in Phoenix. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Yes,
you're on the air, Carl.
Okay, this is Paul in Phoenix, And I keep hearing the term un-American. He's un-American. You just quoted someone saying that Abraham Lincoln was un-American. Like to let everybody know. I don't know how many people wear this, but if you go back and look at some of the older dictionaries, maybe the date back in the 50s and 60s, early 70s, it defines an American as a citizen of the United States of America, one not belonging to one of the aboriginal peoples of the earth. Now, people can go look up an old dictionary and read that. And that's the reason why they keep using that.
That's a bizarre definition. It seems that would exclude Native America. Yeah. I think we've become much more inclusive of our definition of American. We need to continue with in moving in that direction. Josh, and thanks for the call, Carl. Josh in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Josh.
Hey, I voted this morning in Bed-Stuy. This is actually my third time voting in Bed-Stuy. The previous two, I've been able to just walk in and walk out of the voting mm-hmm. place. Today there was a 45-minute line. Mm-hmm. And all of my friends that I've talked to in North Carolina and Wisconsin have been telling me the same things. So I think this is a good thing. I hope it keeps going across the country.
You're seeing a huge voter turnout, in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Josh, thank you very much. Robert in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Robert. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I heard you mention Karl Rove earlier, and I was on CNN's website, and they have in their little ticker, apparently Karl Rove has called the election, predicted it, a landslide for Obama, 338 to 200 in the Electoral College.
Well, of course he would be doing that because he wants to make sure that people out west and people all across the nation, for that matter, who are Democrats, don't bother to go vote because they think it's a landslide.
That's kind of what I was thinking, and I was just wondering if how you felt about it, if you thought it was that, or maybe it's just the Republicans putting the final nail in McCain's coffin.
Karl Rove is lying scum. Karl Rove is a felon. And if you've listened to this program for a long time, you know, I debate conservatives all the time, and some of the most vitriolic and vicious ones there are out there, and I almost never speak of people like that. This is a man who refused to show up when the Senate subpoenaed him. This is a man who has committed crimes against the United States of America, for which he will hopefully go to jail. I would not believe, A, anything he says, and B, if he says it, there's an and it's true, then there's an ulterior motive. And his motive is he doesn't want people to get out to vote. Stan in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Stan.
Yeah, Tom. First of all, I'm pulling for Obama. What we see in a predominantly Republican town is, first of all, heavy turnout, which is probably predominantly Democratic, but also we've seen in the last month the Republican Party, which is a machine. There's a machine here, is demoralized. Mm-hmm. They've not been getting out yard signs. This morning there were Democrats waving signs for Obama, but no Republicans waving signs in a predominantly Republican neighborhood I live in. Mm-hmm. You know, the type of thing. We're seeing that. And also I wanted to make the point you covered yesterday, but reinforce it. I have a working background and study on this. The potential danger of violence. If people perceive, especially blacks, but also whites, or for that matter, Chicanos, perceive a stolen election.
Yeah, this is something they asked me about last night on Canadian TV. They said that there's over 100 cities where riot gear is being passed out to the police, which apparently is true. I don't think there's any potential for violence here. I don't think it's going to happen. I think even if the election was stolen, that you would see nonviolent protest. I think Americans have gone down that road and discovered it doesn't work. So I think it's a Republican talking point, frankly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
For the day, the CIA-linked private military contractor Evergreen Defense and Security Services approached the state of Oregon, where I'm broadcasting from, where we have vote by mail. We have no polling places. It offered to provide security today, quote, detaining troublemakers and making sure voters do not get out of control, end quote. Mm-hmm. Well, This speaks to the intellect of Republicans. By the way, over 100,000 people have complained about voting problems so far. Ohio voters have been falsely told they can send in absentee ballots as late as November 14th. North Carolina, flyers were left on cars at a shopping mall instructing Republicans to vote on Tuesday and Democrats to vote on Wednesday. In Louisiana, people who moved out of their damaged homes after Hurricane Katrina are reporting confusion about the registration status and voting precinct. In New Jersey, the state registration database is operating too slowly to update with the names of recent registrants. In Maryland and Virginia, voters received calls from purportedly from the Obama campaign with inaccurate polling place locations. in Indiana. This is like what happened in New Hampshire, you'll recall, you know, when Sununu first was running against Gene Shaheen 6 years ago, and the guy actually went to jail for slamming the phone bank lines in the Democrat among the Democrats. In Indiana, early voting centers are closing at noon. Many people left standing in line have been sent away without getting to vote. Election law is unclear about this situation. I have some other information on Indiana I'll give you in just a second. In Michigan, many registered voters' names are not appearing on the state website that verifies registration status. That means that people can't find their polling location. It may mean that they're not registered, that they've been slammed by the Republicans. In Kansas City, Missouri, reports are coming in from voters at largely African-American polling places. They're being warned of 6 to 8 hour waits and forced to put their names on a list while in line to vote. Meanwhile, ESNS Optus scans are found this to be, you can see this over at verifiedvoting.org, to be miscounting by about 4%. So if it shifts 4% of one candidate from one direction to the other, that's an 8% total swing. 4% down for one candidate, 4% up for the other. What's that margin of victory these days? This is a Michigan clerk wrote to the Federal Election Assistance Commission on October 24 to tell them that she'd been given a substantial reason to doubt their accuracy. They ran the same ballots through the same machine over and over again, and every single time the results came out differently. But by and large, it was about a 4% swing, 8% total swing. Downright strange stuff. Now, that said, Indiana, the Indiana Supreme Court yesterday afternoon let stand a Marion County judge's ruling directing poll workers today on Election Day to set aside any challenged absentee ballots. Now, in order to get an absentee ballot in the mail, you have to already have gone through the whole song and dance. So you fill it out and you send it in, and now they're going to challenge it again. The Republicans are going to challenge it again, and it may be weeks before it's counted. So those numbers will not be included in the early counts. So, you know, there are scenarios about how McCain could win. Globalresearch.ca in Colorado, two Republican secretaries of state have purged 19.4% of the entire voter roll, 1 in 5. In New Mexico, 1 in 9 voters in this year's Democratic caucus found their names missing from the state-provided registries. In Indiana, the new voter ID laws, I wouldn't be able to vote in Indiana, for example, because there's a difference between my middle initial and my middle name, and one shows on my voting registration card and the other shows on my driver's license. In Florida, the whole verification thing. Here, what we're seeing, well, we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I'll leave it at that. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And, you know, back to our calls here. Lonnie in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Lonnie.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to share a positive experience I had of voting early in Nashville a couple weeks ago. I was, and this especially is in light of the passing of Studs Terkel and Senator Obama's grandmother. I was walking into the polls, and walking out was an elderly black woman, and she was hardly able to walk, and she had a younger woman helping her out the door who also happened to be black. And I caught the younger woman quietly telling the older woman and patting her on the back, saying, hey, you did it. You're a part of history. And I was just so moved by that, and I wanted to share that.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful story. Thanks, Lonnie. I appreciate it. Tom in Seattle. Hey, Tom.
Hi. I have some more good news for you. Mm-hmm. The young people, at least in North Seattle, the young people are out in droves voting.
That's great. You know, we need to, in Washington State, and we're on the air in a couple of radio stations in Washington State,
right,
including in Seattle. We
One
need people to get out and vote for Christine Gregoire for governor. She is a great candidate for governor, and the Republicans have just been launching a massive campaign against her that's been funded by money from all over the country.
Yeah, I know. But, Tom, not only are they voting, but they're participating in the process. The head poll judge couldn't have been more than 18.
Wow.
It was delightful, really. I mean, last time I voted in several election cycles, it's all senior citizens manning the polling places.
Right.
There were young people manning, you know, serving as poll judges.
That is great. That is a sea change. That, you know, I was telling Carl on the morning show earlier, Carl Wolfson, who runs the morning show here on KPIJ, of my recollection of being 6 or 7 years old. And my mom that year, it was the last, I think, time that she did it. She injured her back pretty badly after that. But anyhow, my mom was a poll worker. And I remember in the you know, Kennan Elementary School, you know, watching mom count the ballots along with this whole group of women who were all in their 20s at the time, you know, counting the ballots with my dad and a bunch of guys in the Republican Party over the right-hand shoulder of everybody and the Democratic Party and their people were over the left shoulder watching the ballots being counted. I remember that so clearly as a little kid. And those women are still counting the ballots, you know, by and large. And they're in their 70s and 80s now. And I'm so pleased to hear that young people are volunteering. That's great news, Tom. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. That is super. Howard in Seattle. Hey, Howard.
Hey, Tom. You stole my thunder.
I did?
I was going to call up because I'm from Washington. And I really, you know, one of the battles that's not really being talked about is the Gregoire Rossi battle.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to encourage the people who listen to you who are in Washington State to make sure that they vote today, and I would ask them to vote for Gregoire if that's who they're voting for, as well as people who are not in the Washington State who listen to you, who have friends here, if they'd be willing to notify them to vote as well. It's really important.
Yeah, this is there are a couple of local races that are really, really critical. There's the Big Ten Senate races, you know, obviously, and this is a gubernatorial race in Washington State that is a very, very critical one and a very tight one. And Christine Gregoire, who has been a guest on this program a number of times, is an absolutely spectacular candidate. She's a true progressive Democrat, a wonderful human being, and a great candidate. And she's got a guy going against her who is just a classic pit bull Republican. We need to get out the vote in Washington State. Well said, Howard. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Russell in Hollywood. Hey, Russell.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to say that, first of all, I got my Yiddish mother to vote for Obama and a lot of her Yenta friends. But also, I'm hearing reports around California of not enough ballots, actual physical ballots, at the polling places. And this is like a very easy analog way for them to try to steal an election, just to short the ballots in liberal areas.
Well, hopefully those problems will be solved, Russell. We're just going to have to watch and keep track of this. Mateus in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Hey, Mateus. What's
up? Hey, Tom. I just want to call. I tried so many times and finally got through, but I want to say you're a great man. I believe your show educated a lot of Americans, and I'm very excited, like many Brazilians, that Obama will be elected, hopefully.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say one thing, though. Let's be passionate about the whole world, the whole don't just divide us against them. You know, this past 8 years, the U.S. has just deteriorated nations' relationships with this administration with Bush, and let's change that and keep in mind that we all brothers and sisters will be one planet, okay?
Mateus, when I was in Peru last month, everywhere I went, people wanted to talk to me about the U.S. election, you know, Peruvians. Is it the same in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro? Is it a major topic of conversation or just something passing?
Tom, this is an amazing election. It's just unprecedented how all the TV channels have live coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the main TV channel here is called Global. They have the top journalist in Washington live giving every 15 minutes some bites of the election, and we are all involved in that because we know that the U.S. is a leader in democracy, and everything happens in the U.S. affects the whole world. Young, elderly, everybody's involved in that. It's amazing. It's beautiful to see, though.
Yeah, Mateus, so, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks for sharing that.
Okay,
with us
bye.
For listening to our web stream down there in Brazil. Mike in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Mike.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I think if we get the big landslide I'm expecting, I think we should first thank everybody that contributed money or time or effort to the fight, but especially to Governor Dean for pioneering internet fundraising and organizing as a candidate.
And for his 50-state strategy.
And particularly for the impossible couldn't work 50-state strategy.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
He was widely ridiculed for that. There was this broad consensus in the Democratic Party that they should just pick out the states that they could win. And that had been the strategy that they'd been running for the better part of, as far as I can tell, 16, 18 years. And it was nuts. And Howard Dean was the guy who came along and said, no, no, we can do this. We can run we're a national party. We actually have the ideas. The majority of the Americans are with us. You know,
right.
The majority of Americans agree with us on the issues. Let's run a 50-state strategy. And Howard Dean did it, and it's working. Hopefully, knock on wood, it is working. So, but do not be complacent. Barack Obama needs an absolute landslide. Even if you're in the bluest of blue states, get out and vote today. 45 minutes past.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Yep, get out there and vote.
Don't look at it as a chore. This democracy is yours. Maybe it's time to vote.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster.org for more information. 9.5 minutes before the hour. And taking your calls here, Richard in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Good. Listen, I'm sitting here stuck in traffic looking at the downtown Dallas skyline, and I couldn't help but remember what you were saying about that percentage of people in Texas that believe Barack Obama is a Muslim. What was that percentage?
28, according to the last poll that was done.
Well, you know, I'm going to put a positive spin on that. Of course, I don't believe that. I'm one of the smart ones. I'm going to put a positive spin on that, kind of like a repug would do. Well, at least the 70-some-odd percentage that don't believe that are smart. So we've got a 28% ignorant factor going on.
Yeah.
That's not too bad, is it?
Well, it's not terrible. My point of it, Richard, is that there are people who have believed the wrong, lying, viral emails, and I believe that it is incumbent, it's an obligation of citizenship of the Republican Party and the Republican candidate, John McCain, to correct those misperceptions.
Absolutely. The second that came out, John McCain should have said, you know, y'all come on, start playing fair. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, the rumor was around that he's not even American, born in Hawaii, but, yeah. You know, left for school.
No, I know. There's all these viral emails flying around about his birth certificate and all this other. It's all lies. And we have to not just Democrats and not just Progressive Talk Radio, but all the Republicans, frankly, have to knock this stuff down for the sake of the country. Well said, Richard. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us in Texas. Don in Iowa. Hey, Don.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to call about free trade. To me, it's one of the biggest evils that there are. And I don't know, it's just a slavery rearing its ugly head again to me. And Barack Obama said, I'm pro-free trade in that last debate, and that really scares me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Last night when I was on Canadian television debating this topic, one of the topic of free trade came up, and one of the Canadians actually was saying, you know, I think what the Obama administration will do is they'll take on the low-wage nations. It's not going to be so much a problem between the United States and Canada as between the United States and Mexico. The whole issue is NAFTA going to be renegotiated? I'm not so concerned about that, Don, and here's why. It's because Americans are getting it, that free trade has destroyed our economy. And you know, I really think that Obama's the kind of politician who's going to take he's going to take these things seriously and do something right about it. But thanks for the call and thanks for raising the issue. Mike in San Luis Obispo, I'm listening on KYNS. Hey, Mike.
How's it going? I was calling regarding this Prop 8, same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went to church here this Sunday, and I thought it was a little odd. The pastor did nothing but talk about voting yes on the proposition and cited all the negatives about it. And on the way out of church, there was people handing out yard signs and flyers and everything else telling everybody to vote yes on the Prop 8. I didn't know if it was legal for them to do that or not.
I don't know if it's legal or not with regard to political propositions. If it was a candidate, it would be illegal. Frankly, I don't know when it comes to ballot measures. But whether it's legal or not, as a parishioner, I would have said to that pastor on the way out, that was so inappropriate that, the churches, This is not what Jesus would do. That's what I would have said. You know, Jesus, when the I think it was a centurion came to him and said, you know, should I pay my taxes? Jesus said, whose picture's on that coin? He said, Caesar. And Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. In other words, let's keep these two things separate. And you know, that's just, I would point that out. You know, any pastor who doesn't know that shouldn't be leading a congregation. Derek in Nashville. Hey, Derek.
Hi. Tom, thanks so much for what you do. I listen to you every day. I just want to tell you, I'm from Nashville. It seems like the red states don't have a problem with their voting machines, and the really blue states, I guess, don't. But all these ones that are the problem are more of the problem. I had a very pleasant voting experience. I voted early. I just wanted to let you know that, and that what I'm having for dessert tonight, I've decided to make baked Alaska.
Good one. Good on you, Derek. Derek, thanks a lot for the call. That's great. Baked Alaska. Manny in Miami, Florida, listening on Wins. Hey, Manny.
Hey, Tom. Just want to let you know, listen, my girlfriend, she voted for Obama, and now she's regretting her vote. And she's regretting it because her family's conservative and is saying that Obama is similar to Fidel Castro. I don't know how to respond to that.
Well, he's not. He's not a communist. Fidel Castro believes that the state should own the means of production and distribution. That's communism. I know that the Republicans are running around saying that's socialism. Actually, most Europeans would laugh in their faces. Although the Soviet Union did call itself a socialist republic, but the bottom line is that, you know, Barack Obama is not a communist. I mean, it's just really simple. He's a believer in free enterprise. So I think it's a very, very simple rebuttal. Sorry, Barack Obama is not a communist. The Democrats are not communists. They believe in regulated capitalism, which, by the way, is the only form of capitalism that actually works over the long term. Franklin Roosevelt saved capitalism from itself. He didn't destroy it. He saved it. It's the Republicans who are destroying capitalism and who are leading us down the road to some sort of a totalitarian state, much like Fidel Castro has been running in Cuba. That would be my rebuttal. Robert in Brooksville, Florida. Hey, Robert.
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I'm just calling to share a story that we had. We're me and my brother-in-law and my wife were campaign workers for Obama, and we were driving down the road, and we had reached the place where we were picking up the campaign things. We were going door-to-door to hand out, reminding people to vote, and somebody in a McCain supporter, he followed us to the place.
Mm-hmm. Finish your sentence, Robert. Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah, finish the story real quick. You got
to. Oh, okay. Well, he followed us to the place and attacked us. He started screaming. He threw his cell phone at us. He was calling us communists, and
See, that's the tragedy, Robert. That is what John McCain has to heal. Barack Obama can't do this healing. John McCain has to do what Stephen Douglas did.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to your radio support group for We the People of the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. John Dean on the line with us, author, columnist for FindLaw.com, former White House counsel in the Nixon era. His most recent book, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Legislative, Executive, and Judicial Branches. John Dean, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
It is always so great to have you on. Your thoughts, your insights are so valued. I want to get into this most recent piece that you wrote for FindLaw. It is now absolutely crystal clear that Republican rule is dangerous and authoritarian, and the difference between ruling and governing. But before we get to that, I just have a quick technical question for you as a constitutional scholar. The Article 2 of the Constitution says that the President shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. That's a quote. It has been suggested by a number of people over the months that if when Congress returns for the lame duck session in a couple of weeks, if they were to immediately begin impeachment proceedings against Bush, with no hope that they will actually conclude them, but simply so that they would be running until the end of his, until he leaves office, that, you know, through January 20th, that that may prevent him from issuing pardons for those people in his administration who have violated laws during the last 8 years. What are your thoughts on that, on the legality?
I don't think it would affect him at all. If he is hell-bent on issuing pardons, he's going to issue them. It's one of his most unchallengeable powers. It's plenary. He can pardon anybody who's committed a federal offense, who either has or may even commit a federal offense. Mm-hmm. It is the ability of the state that he is, without challenge, authorized to forgive any crime, including his own.
Right. It's the only kingly power in the Constitution.
It is.
There was a huge debate about it at the Constitutional Convention.
And there's no way to get standing to challenge it.
Right. Yeah. So that, which is a real problem. So when the Constitution says except in case of impeachment, it essentially presumably means that the only thing he cannot pardon is an impeachment.
He can't pardon an impeachment because the impeachment power is with the legislative branch. They
right.
can impeach and throw him out, so he can't, and for a high crime or misdemeanor, he has no authority to excuse any high crime or misdemeanor.
Right, or if he were to pardon, for example, if Dick Cheney or back in the day, if Alberto Gonzalez were to have been impeached for the things he was doing, he couldn't pardon that impeachment.
That's correct. I've long thought that the House Judiciary Committee, which actually is conducting impeachment inquiry right now on a judge, which has been sitting around for a long time because it took them a while to get staff up. They really have no ability or capability to investigate impeachment. But I've often thought if they should have a permanent staff, and one of the people who should be under investigation right now is somebody like David Addington, who's young, who wants to come back into government probably again, who's had a tremendous influence through Cheney, a negative influence, and who right up until the closing bell on January 20th is busy helping Bush and Cheney push through changes in the government that I guarantee you the next president doesn't want. And some stuff is they may be able to unwind. Some will take more time.
Right. And which brings us to the point of your article, which is the authoritarian personality and how Republicans rule where Democrats tend to govern. Flesh out these distinctions for us, John.
Well, Tom, in the aftermath of World War II, there were a bunch of social scientists who wondered, could the United States ever go in the direction of, say, a Germany under Hitler or a Italy under Mussolini? And it was a serious question. And they began undertaking research, and the short answer to the long inquiry was, yes, there is a clear personality type that they called the authoritarian personality. They published a book in 1952. It was criticized, but never shown to be wrong, because it was criticized based on Freudian psychology. But other social scientists, since the early 50s, have done empirical testing. In other words, bringing people in, asking them questions, they volunteer to come in, and they have indeed now produced a half century of hard data that there is an authoritarian personality. These are people who easily submit to authority figures. Once they buy into that, they become very aggressive in pushing that point of view. They're typically highly religious people. They're people who are often bullies towards those who don't see the world as they do. There's a whole slew of traits that are very common. And when I ran into this research, when working on the book Conservatives Without Conscience, it was so revelatory to me. It explained so many people I knew, so many people whose attitude I didn't understand, that it brought a whole new light to the conservative movement. Mm-hmm. And there's clearly an authoritarian conservative personality. There are followers and there are leaders. And in the last column, I laid that out in highly abbreviated form because we've had authoritarian conservative rule for the last 8 years, and we've seen its impact. And as I say in that piece, anybody who wants 4 more years of that is literally doesn't understand what the hell these people have been doing or is unwilling to look and recognize it for what it is.
Would it be not unrealistic to say that that Dwight Eisenhower was the last Republican president who is not an authoritarian personality type?
He was the low authoritarian. Clearly his military background and his the way he set up the White House was in a somewhat of an authoritarian style. But there are high authoritarians, there are low authoritarians. And so, and people typically fall, have some degree of authoritarianism across the board.
You could drop LBJ in that category too, couldn't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. You would call LBJ a right-wing authoritarian, even though he claimed to be a liberal,
right,
because of he was really, in many regards, a highly conservative president, and certainly authoritarian in many regards. But there are no true left-wing authoritarians. This is one of the interesting things about the Democratic Party, and I certainly understand why they have trouble keeping their troops together, because they're like herding cats, whereas the authoritarians march in lockstep. They see the world as black and white. There's no nuance. There's right and wrong, and there's nothing in between. Whereas the Democrats on the other side, they really are much more nuanced. They're grays. They're not all black and white. So this is a very interesting election in that regard.
Because Obama is an anti-authoritarian figure.
Very much so, very much so.
McCain is the ultimate authoritarian figure.
I'm sorry?
And McCain and Palin are both ultimate authoritarian. I mean, they embrace authoritarianism.
Absolutely prototypical. Joe the Plumber is an absolute poster boy for authoritarian followers. He is exactly the type, you know, the leader can do no wrong. Everybody else is disloyal. They're un-American. These are the types of people that have clustered in the core of the Republican Party, and they scare the hell out of me, frankly.
Yeah, I think all of us. The good news is that they tend to be, what, about 20% of the population?
About 25%, the best estimates by the social scientists. They do attract other people who become frightened in the aftermath of 9/11. The ranks certainly increased, but the core of the active personality is about 25% of the American public. So we need to understand them. These are not pejorative comments to me. They're descriptive. This is a clear type of personality. It's not a pathology. It's just the way people are. And when they get in power, they don't govern, which, as you alluded to, is a much more nuanced process of give and take and compromise, whereas they just exercise power. They rule. And there's a great difference. Governing is an art and a craft and a skill. Exercising power takes very little talent and has very abrupt results.
We have just a half a minute left. We're talking with John Dean, findlaw.com, his most recent book, Broken Government. John, my blog post today, I pointed out that Stephen Douglas held Abraham Lincoln's hat while he gave his inaugural address, the guy who lost to him, as a way of healing the nation. He was so concerned about the nation being torn apart. Do you think that John McCain may do the same?
Well, I hope he does. He has loosened up here in the final days a little bit to show the old McCain, somebody who I think we could all respect, the guy who actually campaigned and captured the nomination by going over and joining the authoritarian conservatives, would not. He would spit on his competitor. But hopefully the old McCain surfaces again and helps heal this country.
Let us all hope so, because it seems to me that the healing has to come from the Republican side to the extent that they've done so much of this damage. John Dean, findlaw.com, his most recent book, Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Legislative, Executive, and Judicial Branches. Thank you, John, for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom.
It's great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just give me some truth. Not enough.
That's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option. Get out there and get active.
David, take off your coat. Real slow.
It's our full Monty alert. Yep. This.
David, take off your shoes. Yeah, I'll take your shoes.
The lingerie maker Lucia Lorio of Brazil has come up with a modern, techno-savvy product for women.
You can leave your hat on.
You can leave your hat on, yeah. What it is it is lingerie with a GPS tracking system in it. Now, who would want that? It's downright strange. Dante in San Francisco. Hey, Dante, what's on your mind today? Dante, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi there. My wife and I already voted and Obama and Prop 8. But, you know, we find Prop 2 a little discriminatory against especially Asians in Chinatown, you know, where they claim that the Chinese food merchants treat the crabs and the fish inhumanely. So I voted no on.
Well, I think this has to do with chickens being able to spread their wings, you know, and animals being able to any place where animals are being treated inhumanely, Dante. I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree with you. We need to the extent to which we don't respect all life is the extent to which we dehumanize ourselves as well, and it's just not a good thing. Tom in Pittsburgh, 866-303-2270. By the way, our phone number. Tom in Pittsburgh. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
What's up?
You're
on the air.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is moot or if this is maybe an antidote after hearing Mr. Dean's speech, but I have a couple experiences this past week, and I work at two different churches. One's an evangelical church, one's a Catholic church. And at the evangelical gig, of course, the pastor got up, did this whole sermon on elections, and kind of like I was pretty disturbed because it's kind of just basically rewriting my understanding of history or the things that you know you've talked about on the show. And then my second experience was same day, you know, you go to the Catholic Church and you know there's lots of stuff out about you know basically isolating the abortion issue from a lot of other issues which you know really do bear on each other. It's not just you know you can't just really pull.
Yeah, if you want to talk about life, let's talk about war. For example, or let's talk about poverty. It is so disappointing to hear this. Tom, thanks for the heads up. This is all across the country. We're finding that our churches have been polarized. Let's keep in mind that the job that George W. Bush was given by his father during his father's campaign for president of the United States was to reach out to the churches and politicize them. And that process has been ongoing ever since. Laura in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to give people a little bit of hope in case John McCain should win, which I hope he doesn't. But we have a Democratic governor here in Arizona, so at the very least we should have another Democratic senator should John McCain win, because I'm sure she'll put the Democrat in his place.
Oh, that's interesting. She would. The state law calls for an appointment rather than an election?
I believe so. Well, at least short term we'd have a Democrat, so...
Yeah, very, very interesting. Laura, thanks for the heads up on that. Max in Concord, California. Hey, Max.
Hey, I just wanted to call. I had a great morning. I'm very active politically. I've been supporting Obama since the beginning. My wife's just not into it, gets called on jury duty. I never thought she'd vote. Last night, she said she wanted to vote. I had planned on taking my six-year-old with me because she wanted to go, my four-year-old, so he could see the experience. My 14-year-old wanted to go with us as a family.
That's great.
And it was just the best day. I was so proud. I'm so happy that I've been involved in pushing Obama since the beginning. And I was just so proud that my family, I sat there with my 14-year-old and thought 4 years from now she can vote. And it was just special. And that's it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Max, thanks for the story. It's one of the reasons why, you know, it's something I miss a little bit here in Oregon with vote by mail. I still think we should have polling places, maybe in addition to vote by mail. Keith in Western Massachusetts. Hey, Keith.
Hey, no way. Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Just great. What's up?
Hey, listen, I've been noticing an interesting phenomenon that I don't remember ever seeing before in voting history. Maybe I just never noticed it. But my question is, do you think that it's harder for voting problems now that there's so many hotlines and so many places to call if there's voting problems?
Like 1-866-OUR-VOTE?
All over there.
CNN1 or, yeah.
And I never seen this before. And, I mean, I think this is a great thing. Do you think this would stop situations where a lot of places, if there's voting problems, they'd be like, who cares? It's maybe in their own benefit to keep it that way, or they're lazy, or especially where the battlegrounds are. Is this something that the Democrats or Obama did sort of like focus on? Because I've never seen, I don't remember this on the 2004, I don't remember this on the
I think it's a broad response to the obvious problems in 2004 and 2000. And I agree with you, it's a good thing, but I don't think it's going to stop people like Karl Rove and Stephen Schmidt and others, the true believers. The ends justify the means, folks, from trying to steal elections. They will either A, find ways that are less visible, or B, simply ignore them. But we still have to report them. 27 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. Yes, I've got a screenshot here from Fox News of John and Cindy McCain voting. There are boxes that you drop your ballots in. One has a blue top, the other has a red top. Blue is traditionally Democratic, red is traditionally Republican. Maybe they're for straight party. We don't know. Maybe they're just trying to have one of each. But John McCain, which box does he drop his ballot into? The blue box. And Megyn Kelly over at Fox News apparently reporting that in her opinion, presumably in her opinion, I don't know if she has some inside information, that the Clintons both voted for McCain and Palin. Right. Right. Fox News, totally strange all the time. Ted in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I had such an adventure this morning.
Okay. Tell us about it.
First of all, I registered as a Republican years ago because I like getting their propaganda and their mailers. I love a good laugh.
Yeah, I gave $5 to the McCain campaign about 6 months ago for the same reason.
Uh-huh. Well, I went to my polling place, and the first thing I saw in the driveway was a Lexus van covered in McCain Palin stickers. Vote yes on 8, which is the California proposition to make a constitutional amendment against gay marriage. All of this stuff. It was a rolling campaign vehicle.
Right.
So I went inside, I voted, and I talked to the poll inspector, the person in charge, and I said, I think this is a problem, because it's clearly politicking, at the polls. And she said, well, it's my car, and I've moved it 3 times, and I'm not going to move it again. I said, Madam, this is against the law. She's
the poll inspector?
Huh?
She's the poll inspector.
She was the poll inspector. She essentially is the supervisor of the other poll workers. There were two of them there, two poll inspectors, and the other one just kind of rolled her eyes. It was astonishing. She kept repeating, well, it's not registered to me, so it's okay. And besides, it's further than 100 feet. Well, another woman, lovely woman named Susan, and I actually took out a tape measure and measured. No, it was 75 feet from the front door. But, we raised holy hell. And in fact, had her replaced.
That's
supervisor
great.
Came out and apologized and We nearly had her car towed. And I say this as a former poll inspector. I did three elections running. That crap doesn't happen on my watch. Thank you very much.
There you go. Well, good on you, Ted. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I love it. You're welcome. Thank you very much for calling and sharing the story with us. By the way, I just got this email. This is Demetrio writes in. He says, I tried to vote in Tucson, Arizona today, and they won't let me vote because I moved and got a new post office box, and my driver's license address, which is a post office box, doesn't match my street address where I never received any mail. The Pima County Recorder's Office website says you need to prove your identity with a valid driver's AZ driver's license. I'm on the roster. My voter registration card has my current correct address on it, but they won't give me a regular ballot because my driver's license has a P.O. box on it. There's a lot of other students here at the University of Arizona with this problem. There's nothing online. Tucson ACLU is just a P.O. box. Phoenix office is busy. Voter assistance line isn't even a real number. Pima County Dems aren't answering their phone. What should I do? So if any of our Arizona listeners know, give us a shout, and we'll try to pass that along. Carl in Hollywood. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm about 10 people in front of me about ready to walk into the polling place right now. I'm actually standing in line. But I just want to say how proud I am to be participating in what I hope will be the Jackie Robinson moment for American politics. The question I had for you was, are you aware of a charge that was made in open court against Florida Representative Tom Feeney regarding a software engineer that was allegedly hired to write an undetectable program that would flip the votes 51-49 in Diebold machines?
Yeah, Clint Curtis has been on this show three or four times over the last 5 or 6 years, and I wrote two op-eds about it. Yeah, Clint Curtis is the guy who was hired by Tom Feeney when he was Speaker of the Florida House. He's now a congressman from Florida, federal U.S. congressman. And Tom Feeney hired this guy to write a hack that would flip votes for him. And Clint Curtis has been out of it. In fact, he's running. He ran against Tom Feeney. I think he's running against him again this year, against Tom Feeney for Congress. And absolutely. And it's a story that, frankly, I think needs more coverage. We should have probably covered it again in the last few months. But there's so much. Anthony in Seattle. Hey, Anthony.
Tom, I'm sorry, but I have to beg to differ with you about Christine Gregoire. You know, I did vote for her. I'm a Democrat. I'm the elected PCO. Mm-hmm. However, my mother works for the state. You know, this is why she's in such a tight race, is because the Democrats in this state select these terrible candidates. And that's why she's in such a tight race.
You prefer Dino Rossi?
No. We are left with this unfair choice of choosing the better of two evils. She is just basically.
Well, Anthony, I'm going to stop it right there because today is not the day to be debating that's a debate for the primary. Number one. Number two, I've talked with Chris Gregoire a number of times. I think she's a very good governor personally, and I live, you know, just 8 miles, 10 miles from the. From the Washington state border. I mean, I'm not unaware of what's going on in the state. But let's have those conversations after the election. Scott in San Francisco. Hey, Scott.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'll rattle off my three ideas real quick because I know you're pressed for time, and then I have a question for you. First comment is they talk about the youth vote and how in the early voting, it didn't seem to be turning out, but I wanted to let you know my daughter, who's 21, and it's her first presidential election, has voted for Obama.
That's great. That's great to know, Scott, and thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart, what's up?
With all of the talk of whether Obama is going to be denied a valid victory through electoral fraud, through election fraud, there isn't enough talk about how many Democrats will be denied a seat in the House and Senate because of things like not giving enough voting machines, not giving enough.
No, you're absolutely right. And in fact, in the 2004 and the 2006 elections, there were probably 10, 20, 30 at least in the House of Representatives in particular, where we could identify. I mean, the famous one was down in Florida where 18,000 votes just went into outer space, where we could identify that there was election fraud or election failure at the very least, and I would say fraud. And it hasn't been dealt with, and we need to deal with this. And hopefully an Obama administration with a vast majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives, enough to overcome the conservative Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats, and boy, God willing, a 60-vote majority in the Senate will be able to do something about it. Nick in Riverside. Hey, Nick.
Oh, howdy, Tom. Hey, I had the most beautiful experience this morning. Unbelievably smooth. I was in and out in 15 minutes at the polling place. On the way there, this big, beautiful rainbow, full arch from L.A. to Orange or San Bernardino area covered the sky and illuminated my road to the polling place. But I voted for Obama. You know, America, there's really one choice. It was either Obama or your mama.
That's bad. But it was, yeah, Obama's is a good choice. Thanks a lot. Tim in Petaluma. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine.
I wanted to say that it's really important that we hold the president-elect to his promise to end the genocide in Darfur. I know you've been there and have done great shows on it. And this weekend, thousands of people are gathering at the National Mall in Washington, D.C., and erecting over 300 refugee tents to send a message to the president-elect about ending the genocide. And right now, not many people know it because of all the election coverage, but the president of Sudan, Bashir, who's about to be indicted for genocide by the International Criminal Court, has cut off food aid to children and is literally starving them to death in Darfur. And
this began several months ago, actually, and he put the guy who was indicted by the World Court. He put the guy, I'm forgetting his name, he put him in charge, the guy who was in charge of basically running the Janjaweed into these communities to burn down villages and murder the men and rape the women. He put this guy in charge of the food aid in Darfur. But let's also not, but so your point is well taken, Tim, and absolutely we need to be holding the next administration responsible. Let's also not forget what's happening in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, over 4.5 million people have died in the civil war. This is where a lot of the people from the what were initially identified as refugees from the Rwandan genocide, but were actually the perpetrators of the genocide, went. And this is just spreading across Congo, and we need to be addressing that too. Terry in Newburgh, Oregon. Hey, Terry, got a half a minute here before the break. Quick.
Oh, very quickly, Tom. I just had to pass along an experience. My wife and I are helping my infirmed mother-in-law fill out her ballot here in Oregon. As we're going through, we're just figuring this is going to be a formality, since she's a rock-ribbed conservative, fundamentalist Christian. But as we're going through the ballot, of course, the first thing on the menu was President. I'm poising my pen to fill in John McCain for her, and she said, well, no, I'm voting for Obama this time. She says he's a good Christian man. So there's hope for all of us. I'm sure that they're enjoying the snowball fight in hell right now.
Baruch Hashem. That's wonderful, Terry. You know, it's marvelous to hear stories like that. It's just marvelous to hear stories like that. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. TomHartman.com for our live chat room, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. AirAmerica.com for our live free video stream. A lot going on today's election day. Don't just get out to vote. Get five friends to vote as well.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
A Senate seat at a time. I'm telling you, Franklin Roosevelt, when he was elected in 32, brought in a 63% majority. At that time, there were only 48 states. He had a 63% majority in the United States Senate. When Lyndon Johnson was elected, He had a 60 vote. He had 63 votes in the United States Senate. At that time, there were 100 senators. He had a full 63. So he had 63. What we need is more than 60 votes in the United States Senate. If any time that anything serious has gotten done in this country, it's been because we actually have that filibuster-proof majority among Democrats in the United States Senate. And there are some pivotal races around the country, and probably the most pivotal of all of them is the one in Minnesota. Al Franken. Al Franken is with us on the line. Al, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. So it's a pleasure to be here.
It is always great to have you on, Al. Tell us, what can our listeners in Minnesota, we're on several radio stations in Minnesota, what can our listeners in Minnesota do today to help you in your campaign, and B, throughout the day, and B, what can our listeners all over the United States right now do? I'm assuming the answer is call any friends you have who live in Minnesota, but what can people around the United States do to help your candidacy, and those of the other ones, the other Democrats who are running in tight races against Republicans for the Senate?
Well, of course, if you're listening in Minnesota, the main thing you can do is go and vote.
Yep.
And, you know.
And bring 10 friends to vote too.
And you can also, go to, gotvforchange.com if you want to just get on the phones or door knocking or, you know, getting out the vote, which is, we have a very extensive grassroots organization that has been getting out the votes, but there's still work to be done. And so if you're in Minnesota, you can go to gotvforchange.com. If you're around the country, you can call your friends in Minnesota and get them to vote.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And how's it looking, Al?
I think we're going to win. I'm optimistic. We have been leading in the polls, you know, by a small amount. It's going to be a tight race.
Right.
But we have a great get out the vote operation. We have a great ground game, and I believe we're going to win. And I think that the movement has been toward me. So, you know, I can't wait to get to Washington and work with President Obama and work with Amy Klobuchar in the Senate and work for working families in Minnesota.
Yeah, Amy is marvelous. I met her last time I was there a few months ago, and she's a spectacular senator, and you will make a perfect accompaniment to her in the United States Senate.
Well, she's been working very hard for me, and really, really appreciate it. And Hillary was in Duluth for us, with Amy and me last night, and her husband came in last week, and actually Hillary has been in state twice. Al Gore came in for me. So we've been having, and we're now in our campaign bus going around, and we've been getting just huge, huge enthusiastic crowds.
Mm-hmm. And we have to translate those into votes. So if you're listening in Minnesota, whether you're listening to the web stream, whether you're listening a little later on the day on one of the stations we're time delayed on, still, get out and vote and get your friends to vote. And if you're listening anywhere in the United States right now and you have anybody in your address book, go check your email application, look in your cell phone. If you know anybody who lives in Minnesota, give them a call and say, have you voted for Franken yet?
Yeah, especially people in Minnesota should talk to their friends. And there are some people could use new friends, frankly. And talk to them, too.
There you go. So make some new friends. Call up your friends and say, do you have any friends in Minnesota? Would you please call them? Because we need to get out the vote for Al Franken. This is he's a good guy. He's going to make a great U.S. senator, an appropriate legacy to Paul Wellstone, for Paul Wellstone's seat.
Yeah, David Wellstone is a couple seats from me here on the bus. Paul's son, who fought very hard for Paul's legacy on the mental health parity and chemical dependency parity bill. And I'm really proud to have him campaigning with me this whole week. And he's been great. And we just have unbelievable momentum. And I'm feeling very good about tonight. But, you know, this is my first election, really. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you're supposed to feel on this day. But we're feeling really good.
I think scared. Scared is maybe the wrong word. Adrenaline filled.
There's a tremendous amount at stake. I mean, you're talking about the 60 senators, and we don't know if we're going to get the 60, but it'd be nice to have 58, 59, 60 when so that Obama can get his agenda through. And so that we can do the things that we all, you know, all of us know we need to do, get to renewable energy economy and energy efficiency and change this tax code so it's not tilted to the very rich and powerful. And, you know, all the things that we've talked about so many times, early childhood education, universal health care, all the things that we know that we need to do but have been stopped and stopped and stopped.
Right. And one of the reasons why I really want to emphasize to our listeners all across the country that they contact their friends in Minnesota. If you go to 583 or what is it, 538.com, of all of the tight, to get that 10-vote majority in the Senate, of all the tight races, yours is one of the tightest. You've had an opponent who has just been throwing a lot of mud and a lot of dirt and a lot of slime. And you're a good guy and will make a great senator. And so it is so important right now. This is perhaps one of the most crucial. I mean, here in Oregon, we've got Jeff Merkley going up against Gordon Smith. Jeff Merkley's a great guy. And I've been working really hard to get him elected. But, you know, it looks like he's probably got it.
I'm hoping on that one. I really do think we are going to be at 59 or 60.
And it
depends on, you know, a couple races like Georgia and Kentucky.
Yeah, there you go. Al Franken, get out in Minnesota, get out and help, and get your friends out to vote. Al, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, Al.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. Really all of us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Katrina VandenHeuvel is with us, the editor and publisher of The Nation magazine, the website thenation.com. Katrina, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
Just great. And hopefully by the end of the day, I'll be even better. And you?
We are sitting here at The Nation at the moment just watching our screens, watching TV on the phone with our reporters, our colleagues, trying to get a sense of what's going on around the country. We close tomorrow. We close the magazine. We have things streaming through our website all day, but we are gearing for a long night and into tomorrow, but we're doing so with a sense of joy.
Yeah, and hope. You know, you wrote a brilliant piece recently, Nation to New Yorkers, Vote Change Like You Mean It, about the Working Families Party, and perhaps most importantly about fusion voting, and how the voting system in America isn't really as small-D democratic as it could be or should be. And, of course, it was invented long before John Stuart or Mill came up with, you know, I think it was 1861, he came up with the idea of proportional representation. And long before anybody talked about instant runoff voting. But fusion voting has been working in New York for a while. And tell us about that.
You know, fusion voting has the long experience behind it. Before the 20th century, it was a frequent tool of emerging parties until major parties started banning it. And it allows two or more parties to nominate the same candidate on separate ballot lines. And that simple change, Tom, allows people to vote their values without, quote, wasting their vote or supporting spoilers, which I fear until we get some of those other good reforms you just ticked off, IRV, instant runoff voting, and proportional representation, are still a problem. And I think, you know, for those who want an end to the long national nightmare we've been living through these 8 long years, or who also have just unalloyed enthusiasm for what the possibility of an Obama presidency might mean with mobilized people behind it, fusion voting allows progressives to really share their values, show their values, and hold politicians accountable as we move forward, which we know is so important.
With fusion voting, for example, if we had it here in Oregon, I and Ralph Nader had put himself on the ballot as, you can vote for me as Ralph Nader, and if I don't win, your vote becomes a vote for Barack Obama, then I could vote for Ralph Nader and make a statement, you know, that I like what he's doing, although I would probably vote for, in this election, vote for Barack Obama anyway, no matter what. But, you know, for example, that's how it works, right?
No, if what you're describing, Tom, is instant runoff voting, where if Ralph was running, it's complicated. Ralph would have to also be on the Working Families Party ticket. So, for example, this morning, I guess I'm allowed to disclose my vote if I'm proud of it. I voted for Barack Obama on the Working Families Party ballot line.
Oh, I see.
So that's how it works. So they throw their votes to a candidate, and at least in New York what it's done is made the Working Families Party very influential as a mover and shaker in the state political scene. I think tonight, I know everyone's going to be watching the presidential, maybe Senate races, congressional, but for the first time in many decades, the New York State Senate is likely to return to Democratic hands, and the Working Families Party role in that may ensure that we see a more progressive caucus in that state legislature.
Well, thank you for correcting my misunderstanding of that.
I'm sorry. This stuff is the problem, Tom, is that, you know, the pro-democracy movement is a vital one, and we see it today with long lines, too few machines that aren't reliable. The underfunding and undervaluing of our democratic electoral process is a scandal. But so are the so is the failure to act on reforms that would build a more vital democracy in politics. It's complicated, though, and it becomes just what we went through, where it's, you know, process and explanation. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that people will see the value of it in these next years. I do think there's the opportunity to move on some key things.
Right. So with fusion voting, you have a candidate who can run on multiple parties, so that, for example, in the 2000 election, Louise and I lived in Vermont, and I wanted the Green Party to get their 5% so that they could get federal matching funds, because they are responsible for over 300 communities around the United States having instant runoff voting. And I'm a big fan of IRV and of the Green Party. And we knew that Vermont was going to go for Al Gore. But even at that, we weren't willing to both, you know, vote the Green Party ticket. I voted for Nader. Louise voted for Al Gore. Had we lived in a swing state, obviously we would have, you know, in Florida, for example, we would have both voted for Al Gore. But I wanted that party to have a little more juice because of the good work that they're doing around the country. This is a way that, if we had fusion voting here in Oregon, I could vote for Barack Obama on the Green Party ticket, for example. And the Green Party would get the credit for that vote for things like federal matching funds, for things like just, you know, Benny points, you know, whatever, and brownie points. And yet Barack Obama would be the nominee.
You know, I think part of what you're talking about what millions of people want in this country, which is a broader politics. I mean, I do think even on this extraordinary day when Barack Obama, you know, may mark a milestone in the scarred racial landscape of this country, and I think, you know, be a victory for a lot of decency and tolerance, we still live with a downsized politics when it comes to so many issues we care about. And that, you know, is going to require across-the-board reform, and that really does speak to instant runoff voting and proportional representation. I wrote an essay called Just Democracy. You can get it at thenation.com in July, which lays out all the good groups and all the reforms that people are working on, and it's a matter of political will. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, on this great day, I'm about to turn from your show, Tom, to work on my 17-year-old daughter's article for her school paper about campaign financing.
Mm-hmm.
And though it is extraordinary to see how Obama used the internet to raise money from small donors, he also raised money from a lot of bundlers and big donors. And I think we're going to have a reckoning with that, because I do think there is an alternative system, a hybrid, to be developed where you use the internet for small donations. So people feel a part of a system. It's like civic participation, that the playing field is leveled and ordinary citizens can run for office. But we're not there yet, coming out of the most expensive presidential election campaign in our history. So, yeah.
No, we have a long. We certainly have a long way to go. And proportional representation is something that's not going to happen, because that would require a change in the Constitution. And I don't think any of us want to throw open the door to a constitutional convention when there's many toxic right wingers around, running around loose as there are.
That's
but,
true.
But IRV is a very safe way to do it. It can be done both locally and federally, I believe. Without any challenge to the Constitution, and San Francisco, the largest community that has IRV. So Katrina Vanna-Heuvel of The Nation, editor and publisher of The Nation, the website thenation.com, in the 2 minutes more or less that we have left, what do you see as the governing issues that if, you know, the fate's willing and the God's willing and whatever, Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, and particularly my big if he gets a 60-vote majority in the Senate, we should all be focusing on? Because it seems to me that our work begins on Guy Fawkes Day on November 5th, not that it ends at the end of the day today.
You're absolutely right. It begins, and it begins in the sense of two things. One, I believe that we are at a moment when the old order has died, and I think we are at an ideological watershed. I think Obama has a historic opportunity to govern with a progressive majority, and I think that the reality of our condition, the most serious financial crisis, economic crisis since the Great Depression, may well move Obama to be bolder than he had envisioned. And I think that is what happened with Roosevelt, for example, who ran as a moderate Democrat. I think that the economy will be central. I also think what will be central is, though, even though this election did not end up being a mandate on the war in Iraq, beginning to move out of Iraq as Barack Obama campaigned on, and not escalating our presence in Afghanistan, which could really undermine the hopes and the possibilities of an Obama administration, which I think needs to focus on reengaging the world, which is more than ready. I think there's extraordinary excitement, and on rebuilding this country, which is in desperate need of that.
Yeah. I've been calling for some years for Republicans to take back the Republican Party, good Republicans, and for Democrats and for progressives to take back the Democratic Party as a starting point. I mean, it's and IRV and the Green Party. There are so many starting points. There's so many places to do this. We just have a half a minute. Will John McCain do what Stephen Douglas did in 1861 when he stood up on the platform next to Abraham Lincoln and volunteered to hold his hat while Lincoln gave his inaugural address as a way of symbolic way of healing the country?
Of McCain healing?
Yeah.
I think the most important thing John McCain could do at this point is find a way to rebuild a Republican Party that will not have a Sarah Palin in it. I think we're going to see a civil war in that party. John McCain might use, Tom, we've been talking about it, maybe he should form a third party. If he truly is the maverick, he says he is, this party, even though he's deviated from his maverickism, is not his.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems to me that there's so much damage. I mean, 28% of Texans think that Barack Obama is a Muslim. Somebody in the Republican Party, it's the Republican Party that has to address this damage that they've done to the electorate and to this nation.
I mean, the other thing we need to keep talking about is being a Muslim is not a smear. Being a Muslim is part of the American fabric and mosaic.
That's absolutely right. As Colin Powell so brilliantly said, you're
right.
Absolutely right. Katrina Vanna-Heuvel, TheNation.com. Thank you, Katrina. 17 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Taking back the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman with you. 866-303-2270, our number. Teresa in Lansing, Michigan, my old hometown. Hey, Teresa, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to get a shout-out to people that are standing in line to vote. I noticed today when I was voting that there are a lot of brand-new voters that don't understand the difference between voting the partisan section and then the nonpartisan section, and that they can't vote a straight ticket and a split ticket. I just hate to see new voters' votes being tossed out because of that.
And this,
oversight.
By the way, it varies from state to state as well, how it's handled and where it's handled and whether or not the presidential election is considered partisan or not. I believe it's in North Carolina where it's not considered, and apparently in Michigan it is. Read your ballot carefully is the bottom line.
Right.
Teresa, yeah, thank you very much. And very well said. Very well said. Julie in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Julie.
Hi there.
I got a call. Pardon my interrupting you, Julie, but I got a call from a reporter in Arizona who said that the blue box that John McCain dropped his ballot in was not blue because it was for straight party Democratic votes. It was the blue box is for absentee ballots and the red box is for regular ballots. And so he dropped his, ironically, dropped his ballot into the blue box. So,
I mean, because different sites are different. And if you vote there, you have to stick it through a machine. And if you're an absentee, then you drop it in a box with a red lid on it at my polling site. So obviously they all have a little bit of individuality on it.
Well, on Fox News, they've got a picture of him dropping his ballot in the box with a blue top right next to the box with the red top.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that he didn't stick it through the little machine, which is the thing that actually counts things more. So maybe it's a good thing he just dropped it in a box. Anyway, what I'm calling about the student at U of A down in Tucson, mm-hmm. who said he was having trouble with it. There is an organization in the state of Arizona called the Arizona Advocacy Network. Mm-hmm. They have an 800 number. If anyone is having trouble at the polls getting their vote counted, that he can call. And they will send an advocate, they will send a lawyer, they will whatever to help them. So I want to give you this number. Okay. It's 1-866, and then it's Our Vote, or it's 1-866-687-8683.
Right. OURVOTE.
And that's the number to call from Tucson. There's also a local number for the Phoenix area if any of the students at, say, ASU or any of the other universities are having trouble, and that's 602-297-2500. Great. And it's the Arizona Advocacy Network, and they're doing some great work out here to try to make sure everybody gets their vote counted.
Julie, thank you so much for the heads up on that. It's much appreciated. Dave in Los Angeles. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Tom. I couldn't believe it this morning. They changed my polling place for 20 years, and they tried to give me a provisional ballot. Luckily, I had the presence of mind just to say, look at the sample ballot to check the polling place. We couldn't believe it this morning, me and the wife, that the polling place had changed further away. We went there. She got in okay. They told me that I wasn't on the list, that they were going to hand me a provisional ballot. I had the sample ballot with me. 5 minutes later, I was talking with another lady at the polling place. It was a residential house in a dead-end street. I would have never found this place without looking at Google Maps. But talked to her, and I said, are you sure? You might want to double-check. I have the sample ballot with my name. The gal says, I'm looking now. She took my sample ballot, and then it was just a simple typo. It wasn't nefarious, but mm-hmm. please, folks, take your sample ballots. Double-check your polling place. I couldn't believe this happened to us. 20 years in the same polling place.
Was there a typo on your sample ballot that was identical to the typo that was on the voter registration rolls?
No. She added a letter to my name, and she never looked at my sample ballot when I first gave her my name.
Oh, I see. So this was just a in-the-moment typo.
In the moment. And she just said, no.
Because, there's this group, Young Political Majors, YPM, that has flipped apparently over 70,000 voter registrations in the state of California. Now, Acorn only registered 39,500 Californians, but 70,000 people in California have had their registration flipped from Democratic to Republican or to Independent, in some cases they actually change people's addresses. They'll insert things like apartment numbers when people don't even live in apartments. The president of this company, Mark Jacoby, has been arrested, and they're paid by the Republican Party. So 70,000 Democrats in California, and this is happening all over the country, by the way, this organization is doing this on behalf of the Republican Party, 70,000 Democrats will not be able to be contacted by the Democratic Party for Get Out the Vote. 70,000 Democrats in California may have had their polling place changed. When they show up, they may be told that they're not on the list. There may be differences introduced into between their name and their voter registration, which will cause them to force a provisional ballot. Dave, good on you for being persistent and tenacious, and good that it was just a contemporary problem, not one of these. But I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who are going to get a real surprise because they signed what they thought was a petition, say, against Prop 8, and instead it was YPM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes past the hour. Pierre in Dallas, Texas, listening on 1360 Rational Radio. Hey, Pierre, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Just great.
I'm a former Portlander, and I tell you, I miss my mountains, man.
Yeah, it's really something to see Mount Hood on a clear day from here, or Mount St. Helens for that matter. What's up?
Well, I actually have a question related to kind of a post-election issue. You know, George Bush and his departments are kind of rewriting a lot of regulations that are going to affect the environment, women's right to choose, and a lot of other things that, in my mind, are pretty disturbing, and you're not really hearing anything about it. And so my question is, what can the next president do to counteract the changes that George Bush is putting in place now?
Well, some of them can be undone by executive order. This is the exact same thing, Pierre, that George Bush did when he came into office to the executive orders that Bill Clinton did. Some of them can be reversed by executive order. Some are going to require legislation. Some are going to require an approval process and public comment, and so they may take a year or more. What the mistake that Clinton made was that he didn't get all these things in time. You have to get them in 90 days before you leave office. And if you do, then that comment period is considered to have been met. So when Bush came into office, he actually just dumped hundreds of regulations that Clinton put in at the last minute and, just walked away from them. The next president's not going to be able to do that. The Republicans have got this thing figured out. So it's going to be a tough one. I mean, you know, whoever's coming in next is inheriting a real mess. And hopefully it's going to be Barack Obama. Get out and vote! Noodles in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Noodles.
Hey, what's up, Tom? I just want to share with everybody here in Scottsdale, it's like a low voter turnout today, at least at my polling place it was. But this is a Republican area. This is like John McCain's turf, you know.
Right.
One thing made me think of maybe a reason why, though. The gentleman before the break said that his polling place was moved. Well, mine was too. And I had to go and, you know, kind of drive around in the area.
Oh, interesting. Are you registered as a Democrat?
Yeah.
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 You wonder.
But I got right through. I didn't have a problem with, any ID or anything. They didn't try to, you know, make me sign on a provisional ballot.
Right.
So.
Interesting, very interesting. Noodles, thanks for the call. Cecilia in Winter Park, Florida. Hey, Cecilia.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. You have an update on the Curtis Feeney race?
Yes. Well, actually, that's my district. That's District 24. And Clint Curtis lost to Suzanne Cosmas. In the primary, yes. And she is running on the Democratic ticket against Tom Feeney. And we have a chance to turn this around. The race is very competitive, and Suzanne has won the endorsements of all the local newspapers, and Tom has not run a very aggressive campaign. Actually, the number of us are stunned at his campaign because it is not what he would have done in the past. He's actually apologized for his mistakes, claiming that he was a rookie congressman.
Yeah, a lot of Republicans are not running. I mean, you know, it's amazing to watch here in Oregon, for example, Gordon Smith, our Republican senator who votes with George Bush virtually all the time. But occasionally, I mean, you know, less than 10% of the time, occasionally reaches across the aisle, just like John McCain. I mean, John McCain has voted 90% with George Bush. And so that those few times when he's actually running TV ads with pictures of John Kerry and pictures of Barack Obama in them, our Republican senator. And of course, you know, here in Oregon, people are not buying it. So the woman who is running against Feeney in the race in Florida, in the you said the 24th district, Cecilia?
Right. Her name is Suzanne Cosmas, Cosmas. She's been endorsed by the Sierra Club, by a lot of the progressives, Emily's List. And from what we can see, this is leaning blue. We have a good chance. She was a former Florida House of Representatives and was first elected in 1996 and was reelected three times. So the woman has a good basis of knowledge about the issues. And I've met with her and I've worked on her campaign. And so District 24, get out there and vote not only for Barack Obama, but for Cosmas as well.
Absolutely. Cecilia, thank you so much for that. I truly appreciate the information and the update on that. Helen in Duluth, Minnesota. Hey, Helen,
Hi.
What's up?
I'm calling just because I'm noticing their demeanor. The Republicans, you can tell them at the voting places. I walked out of my voting place, and I was outside the building, and I went, woohoo, you know, and the one lady said to me, were you the one that went, woohoo? And I said, yeah, that was me. And she said, you must have voted for Barack. And I said, yes, I did. And you could tell she didn't. And yeah. They have no spirit. They're doing their civic duty, but they have no bubble. They have no spring in their step. That's what I'm noticing. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, I suspect that's happening all over the country, and it's interesting to see just this tidal wave sweep across the United States. But all that said, and thank you, Helen, for that report, and for the woohoo. All that said, if you live in the West, get out and vote. No matter how this thing is called, no matter when it's called, there are a lot of important races besides the presidential race. And we want Barack Obama, if he is elected president of the United States, to have an overwhelming mandate, an overwhelming majority. Rob in Queen Creek, Arizona, you wanted to correct an earlier caller about Napolitano appointing somebody to replace McCain if he were to be elected.
Yes. I just read in the Arizona Republic this morning that if McCain's elected, Janet Napolitano would have to replace him with a member of his party.
I see.
So she'd have to replace him with a Republican.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that we'd lose that seat. And another issue that would come up is if Barack Obama wins. There's been a lot of talk that Napolitano will be part of his cabinet. And if that's so, we would then have our Secretary of State, which is a Republican, Jan Brewer, take over, and she's pretty bad.
Whoa. Okay. That's not good news. Rob, thank you very much for the information. It's always good to know the truth, though, and to know what's going on. Ann in Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to thank you for giving me the encouragement to go out and work for democracy, and I've been doing that for the past month. And
good
on you, Ann. I was out canvassing today, and some of the poor areas, and you know, those people really don't know about all the rules and all this stuff, and they really do have a much tougher time getting to vote than you know, just, you know, me. I feel so fortunate, and I was glad I could help some of them get through the red tape and vote, get out and vote today, and that's I thought it's a great day, so
yeah,
I just wanted to share it.
Well, congratulations, Ann. Good on you, and thank you very much for doing that, and thanks for calling and sharing your story with us. Diane in Tucson, you have some advice for the young man who has a P.O. box on his driver's license, but he's got utility bills and everything else that show where he actually lives, and his registration shows where he actually lives.
Right.
In Tucson?
I have, this is from the Pima County government website. All he has to do is carry in two of those other pieces of ID. If he's got a utility bill, if he's got a phone bill, if he's got a cell phone bill, a cable bill, bank or credit union statement, valid Arizona vehicle registration, a vehicle insurance card, any recent mailing of official election materials with his real name and address on, his voter registration card. He just needs two of those things, and he will get a regular ballot.
Great. Diane, thank you very much for that. And to all the, particularly the students who are registered in Arizona, those are the rules, and you know, go for it. Sandy in Thousand Oaks. Hey, Sandy.
Hi, Tom. I just worked at a polling place this morning here, and we had about 100 people an hour coming through. It was wonderful.
That's
and
great.
I also heard as I left the call from Tucson, and there's a number that people can call. It's an Obama number.
Mm-hmm.
The number is 877 U.S., the number 4, Obama. 877 U.S. 4 Obama.
Great.
They can call that number from anywhere in the country and get some help.
Sandy, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Robert in Los Angeles. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. First, let me say you should be a college class requirement for everybody. Your show is absolutely amazing. I tell everybody about it. I put up signs today in Orange County saying stop the hate, no on 8. The last 538.com is amazing. You got to go to it. He's saying 349 to 189. Oil is up $7 today, and gas is up 13%. And what an exciting, great, passionate time in history. And
yeah.
Fox News is terrible. I want to know your opinion. What we can do to stop Please.
Here's what I think is going to happen, Robert, with regard to not just Fox News but broadly, because you're seeing, for example, O'Reilly falling in the tank in the ratings and Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow beating him, I mean, just spanking the guy. And we're seeing the same thing. In the Los Angeles market, in the spring book, my ratings beat Bill O'Reilly's ratings 2-1, almost 2-1. I beat Rush Limbaugh now in several books in several different cities over the last year and a half, 2 years. We've been doing this show for 6 years. 6 years ago, when I first started this radio show, there was this pervasive notion among program directors and in the radio industry that somehow liberal talk radio was outside the mainstream and was fringe. And, you know, we have achieved the point where a lot of stations are actually profitable now. But I think that the election of Barack Obama is going to cause this industry to say, the radio industry, to say, you know, maybe we need to be listening to what these folks who are voting for Obama have to say so we know what's going on. I predict a resurgence, a huge forward movement of progressive talk radio all across the country.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
I'm gonna show you how to take control. Gotta vote, yeah, you know how it goes. But y'all looking for the cars and clothes, and this other man hope is that y'all don't vote, cause even he know majority rules. Keep majority of the minority fooled. Your vote really does matter, dude, and that attitude, government's loving it, so if you're looking for your retribution, be part of the problem or the solution. Really, all due respect, kid, voting is free, last time I checked it. Look at he crooked and he connected. You don't vote, did he getting reelected? See, I'ma tell him in the style of a rhyme, we can change the world with one vote at a time. Come on, if you don't vote,
one vote at a time, get out there, vote. And if you've already voted, go through the list in your cell phone, go through your Outlook files, go through that, whatever it may be, your email, and call your friends and say, hey, have you voted today? Do you need a ride? Can I help in some way? It is so important. Today is the day. And even, and particularly if you live out west and the networks or whomever starts calling the election because of results on the East Coast, get out and vote anyway. There are a lot of things on the ballot that are really important. There are a lot of state and local races that are really important. And perhaps even more important than all of that, although, you know, you flip a coin, is that Barack Obama, to be president, needs to have a massive, overwhelming mandate, a huge, a landslide in not just the electoral vote, but the popular vote as well. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Victoria, what's happening in Washington, D.C. today? What's going on in the world?
Well, I'm at the White House, and later on the president will be having a small dinner party with his wife and a group of people. We don't know who they are yet, but we will be given a readout on that. And then he'll be watching the election's returns in what I imagine will be a dimmed room with no popcorn and no snacks.
Yeah.
And at some point,
no pretzels.
No pretzels allowed. Absolutely not. Although he may feel like choking on one as the evening goes on, possibly. And then we will get a statement from Dana Perino later in the evening.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else going on?
I can report that we had a long line at my polling booth. We normally have no lines at all where I vote. It's normally as quiet as a grave, as a matter of fact. But it was very, very busy, and I waited 40 minutes, which for me is an eternity. So people are voting.
Yeah, we're hearing that from all over the country. Okay, Victoria, thank you very much for the update and the report.
Thank you very much.
Great talking with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Reed in Pembroke Pines, Florida. Hey, Reed, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air, Reed.
Oh, thank you. I didn't realize you were going to get to me that fast. I live in the 21st Congressional District, Lincoln Diaz-Balart.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about him the other day. He and his brother Mario Diaz-Balart and Ileana Ross Layton, and the three horsemen of the apocalypse, are fighting for their political lives in this election and not doing very well in the polls at the moment. So there's some good news there because they deserve to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to comment on Amendment 2, which is similar to Prop 8 in California. It's a constitutional amendment to make gay marriage illegal. A very good friend of mine was going to vote yes to approve it because his personal beliefs are different than mine in regarding this aspect, and I respect his beliefs and everything, but I explained two things to him. We have three laws on the books down here that already prohibit that in the first place. And in the second place, if you read the last sentence in the amendment, it also makes illegal any kind of civil bond, civil contract between any two people, even if they are male and female. And, of course, that hurts a lot of the seniors who are living together.
Mm.
So the people down here in Florida, on Amendment 2, I urge you to consider to vote no. Even if you disagree with the prospect, vote no. You're already protected. I'm passing one of the polling places right now, and the lines are not long at all. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, okay, great. Get out and vote. Read.
Get out and vote. Even if you vote the other way, just do your duty.
There
go
you go.
Out and vote.
No,
thank
well
you.
Said, Reed. Thank you very much. Paul in Brattleboro, Vermont. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Tom. I hear that Air America is having a post-election show tonight with David Bender and Ron Reagan.
And Tom Hartman. Yeah.
And Tom Hartman. Hey, good.
Yeah.
Great. I look forward to hearing it.
Great. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks.
Good to hear from you. Christine in Forest Grove, Oregon. Hey, Christine.
Hi, Tom. It's Christy. I've been canvassing here for I've been canvassing out here in Washington County for Campaign for Change, and yesterday I knocked on the door of a Hispanic gentleman in a wheelchair who has never voted, did not receive his ballot, thought it was too late. I put in a call to the elections office. I told him I'd check back in with him at the end of my route. And 45 minutes later, I came back to his house, knocked on the door. He said that elections had called him, and he needed to arrange transportation, and he said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get it done in time. And right then, a gentleman from elections with an Obama shirt came up the walkway behind me, and elections had dispatched this guy to drive 40 minutes out to Cornelius, Oregon, to have this gentleman sign a release form, and he was driving all the way back to Beaverton to pick up the ballot, drive it back to this gentleman, and they're coming back today to pick it up. And
yeah.
It was so inspiring and so impressive, the organization, but I know Oregon is, you know, everyone's assuming Oregon's going Obama, and this gentleman was so excited when they showed up with his ballot. He said he had several other friends that had never received it, and I think what I love about your show is it's even though it looks good for Obama today, these are people that are going to now be involved and they're engaged because they knew their vote counted. And I just thought that was the best story out of all the canvassing I've done that I've seen.
That's a wonderful one, Christy. Thanks so much for sharing that with us. This is a generational change. Thank you so much. Marcia in Atlanta, just a few seconds left here, Marcia.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that over 2.5 million people have logged on to Facebook to say they have voted.
Oh, that's great. So
they have a running tally. So if you're on Facebook and you log in, there's a running tally there at the top of your homepage.
That's great. So the social networking networks are keeping track of it. Thank you, Marcia. Great to hear from you. Coming up tomorrow, well, by tomorrow it'll be all over. We'll have a brand new president with luck in your votes. Get out and vote today! It'll be Obama. We'll wrap up the election with it. A look at the outcome of the major races and election issues from around the nation. Of course, your calls and the best of the rest of the news here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out and vote. And no matter how far west you live and no matter when the election is called, if you haven't voted, vote. See you tomorrow. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.